Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. As always, Dan Rosen here, and a clean shaven, very clean looking Sean Rourke out there. Sean, I don't even recognize you. I mean, I don't even know who I'm looking at right now on our Zoom call here.
Neither does my family. So you're in select company. it was a bit of a shock. So yeah, first haircut in 15 months. I go to the barber's and he's cutting somebody else's hair and it ends up being his cousin. And unbeknownst to me, they were taking bets on what I was going to ask the barber to do with my hair. He was very nervous that I was going to ask him to style it.
When was the last time you styled your hair?
Never. When I told him to take out the buzzers and put a 3-blade on it, he relaxed.
Ah, good. Nice, easy cut, except they had to get 2 brooms out to clean the floor probably, right?
I had to tip the lady who makes the appointments and sweeps up the, I didn't tip the barber, I tipped the lady that sweeps up the hair.
Well, you donated a whole head of hair to somebody else, really, is what you've done. Lots going on. So much going on in the National Hockey League. It's been a week, as they say. And we're going to have Craig Berube on here in a little while. We pre-recorded that interview with the coach of the St. Louis Blues. So you hear that soon. He had a lot of interesting things to say about the Blues, the division, and certainly about some other things going on in the league. But let's start with the New York Rangers. I've been very busy with this over the past couple of days. And the New York Rangers, shockingly, I was shocked, Sean, to hear that Jeff Gorton, their general manager, and John Davidson, their president, who hadn't even been on the job for 2 years yet, were fired yesterday. We record this Thursday. They were fired on Wednesday and replaced by Chris Drury, who was the associate GM of the Rangers and now is taking over both roles, president and general manager of the New York Rangers. And I was stunned because the Rangers are still in this rebuilding phase. I think they're coming out of the rebuilding phase, but to me, there was nothing that suggested that the rebuild was off kilter or anything was going wrong or whatever. But James Dolan, their owner, as his is right, as the owner, he clearly thought they needed a change in leadership. So he made the move, fired Gorton, fired Davidson, and said, Chris Drury, you're our man. Take us to the promised land.
Yeah, I mean, I think shocked is a good word. I guess you could throw befuddled in there.
Or yeah.
That would be a good word.
Mystified,
as well.
I like as well. I say that on this one of podcast a few times.
But, I mean, there's a couple of different ways to look at it. You know, one is Chris Drury was in demand when Pittsburgh was looking before they hired Hextall and Berkey. I know that there was some interest there. And I think the Rangers kind of looked and said, if we keep this guy where he is, he's going to look to go somewhere else at some point. I mean, we all want to be more important than we presently are, you and I included. I thought that was part of it. I guess the thing that shocks me is it finally felt like the rebuild was going right. It didn't at the beginning of the year. Like at the beginning of the year, you're like, oh my God, what a mess this is. Kako can't score. Lafreniere can't score.
Yeah.
You know,
Mika Zibanejad couldn't score.
Yeah. You're like, but especially with the young kids, you're like, these kids aren't ready. Will they ever be ready? You know, and now they're all starting to come together. You look at Condre Miller, you know, they're the youngest team in the league, I think. And they made it to the last week of the season before they were officially eliminated. They put a scare into the Boston Bruins before, you know, they run into the Islanders. And we talked about this last week on the podcast, and you were 100% right in saying that that was going to be the litmus test, and they failed it miserably. But to me, and I've never been all that high on the Rangers in the past few years, like I kind of felt like they were where they were supposed to be, and next year would be full of promise. And I don't know what happened to make that change. You know, I don't know if it was the composition of the team and, you know, whether they didn't like that or what it was, but certainly Gorton didn't do anything wrong. And like you said, I don't know that JD had enough time to put his fingerprints on the organization. So weird times in the Big Apple.
Yeah, no question. So I wonder if, you know, the realization, because Monday when they lost 6-3 to Washington, forget everything else that happened in that game. Monday when they lost 6-3 to Washington, they were eliminated from the playoffs. And so if you don't count the return to play qualifiers, they technically didn't make the playoffs. They were in the qualifiers and lost 3 games. they haven't played a playoff game in 4 years now, right? I mean, they have the fourth straight year that they have not made the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I wonder if the realization of that sunk in with ownership and impatience, patience runs thin, and it's okay, this is the year maybe we should have been there. Or maybe they looked at it and said, maybe it was ownership looking at it and saying, I don't like how it went against the Islanders. We had a chance here to make some noise, and we got hammered by the Islanders, and we just got hammered by the Capitals. And frankly, we're struggling against the best teams in the division. They dominated the Devils and the Sabres, and they dominated the Flyers, but they struggled this season against, the top teams in the division. But like you said, Sean, like, that's kind of what we expected would happen, right? That's kind of where I thought they would be this season with everything that they've got, all the turnover that they have, the young players, the turnover in net from a franchise icon, all of that stuff. The Rangers, I thought they'd be fifth or sixth in the division. They're fifth. That's exactly where they thought they would be. And the other part of that is I thought this was the season, and it really has been, where they were going to pretty much throw all their young guys out there and say, here's what we got. It's like an audition. And maybe in the offseason, I don't know what Jeff Gorton's plans were in the offseason, had he gotten there, but throw these young guys out there so other teams see him. Here's who we have. This is what Vitali Kravtsov looks like. This is what Morgan Barron looks like. This is what, forget about Lafreniere, Kako, but like, this is what these guys look like. And we know we need to address this. We know we need to get a little more grit and grind in our game. We're not able to compete with Boston and Washington and the Islanders and the Penguins in that department. And maybe trades would have been happening and they would have addressed that stuff in the offseason. But Jeff Gorton never had a chance to get there. And now it's on Chris Drury. He spoke today and he didn't give him any specifics, but I really think that's the road that they have to travel down. Now, you want to be able to compete against the best teams in the Eastern Conference, in the Metro Division, as it will be likely next season. You got to add more of that type of player. And the two first names that come to mind are like the Nick Foligno's or the Zach Hyman's, those type of players, Blake Coleman's, right? They'll all be free agents in the offseason. Those are the things that the Rangers, that intangible aspect, are what the Rangers are missing right now. But I think they knew they were missing that going into this season. And I don't think the expectation, and Chris Drury said it today, the expectation and the mandate was not to make the playoffs. Well, if it wasn't to make the playoffs, why are we losing patience?
I don't know. And why is Chris Drury the man in charge now if the playoffs wasn't the finish line? To me, it seems so simple and it seems so trite when you say it, and it's said all the time. You need to learn to win. Every great team has had to learn to win. There's the famous story of Gretzky, at the end of the Stanley Cup final against the Islanders, walking by their room and it being dead silent because
guys on ice bags and all
what they had
stuff.
Just been through. And that's when the light bulb clicked for Wayne and the Oilers and the price that had to be paid to win. And then they went on to become the next dynasty. Like, half the New York Rangers roster doesn't know what the NHL is about. Still doesn't know what the NHL is about now, because this is not the NHL that they're going to play in for the next 10 years. This is, you're walking into the Bruins 8 times in a year. That's never going to happen again.
Right.
And they're stealing your lunch money because they're a great team. They're a veteran team and they know how to win on a bad night, and they know how to get into kids' heads, and they know how to line up and just say, here we are, we're going to beat you. And the Bruins weren't that. A few years ago, they had to learn to become that. So have the Capitals. So have all the good teams in that division. And that's what the Rangers have to learn. And to me, that's what this year was about. Sure, take your lumps against the Islanders. Take your lumps against the Bruins and the Capitals. But learn from it.
Learn.
And next year, be ready. Yeah. And once you feel like that core is ready, everybody's on a first contract because you're so young. There's some money around. You go spend a little in free agency. You can move a couple of redundant pieces. But to me, and their goaltending was good, but to me, like, you walk into this year, you expect to go to the playoffs with two young goaltenders, one in his second year, one in his first year, and oh yeah, we'll just we'll saunter our way right into the playoffs. It's not going to happen. To me, fifth place is an accomplishment that maybe there's not a parade down the canyon of heroes, but there should be a couple of slaps on the back. And, you know, somebody should go to David Quinn and say, hey, you know what? You did a hell of a job this year.
Yeah, you look at the Rangers. I thought when they going into those Islander games over the weekend that they lost both, I thought to myself, if they can get through these next four games, two against the Islanders and two against the Capitals, and make those games against Boston tonight and Saturday, Thursday night and Saturday, meaningful, at least tonight's game, meaningful. Well, that would be huge for them. They didn't get there. But if you look at the totality of it, in the last, you know, since the start of last season, they're 63, 50, and 11. That's above 500 with the youngest team in the league, with a lot of turnover, with a lot of strange things going on, COVID, all those things happening, right? Last season, when the pandemic hit, they were trending in a really good direction. They might have been a playoff team. This season, if nothing, you know, if nothing had happened and, you know, the divisions were as normal as they would be, I mean, dare I say they would have been a playoff team? You know, like, I mean, that second wild card team, they would have been right there. You know, I mean, they would have had a chance. This was the toughest division that they were, that this is the toughest division when you look at the depth of divisions. No chance. Like, the only team in this division that could have a young goaltending and make it were the Washington Capitals because of who they are, right? Because of what they have. Maybe the Pittsburgh Penguins, too, because of everything they have in front of those guys. But I think overall, the rebuild has gone way better than I thought it would go when they sent that letter out on February 8th, 2018. They've gotten lucky along the way. And now Chris Drury takes over. And it's a very interesting offseason because there is a little bit of remaking of the roster that needs to go on. And I think that was proven in these last four games that they're not equipped to handle some of that grit and toughness and grind, whatever that's, you know, you want to call it. So Chris Drury spoke today. He didn't give him any specifics, but he knows he's got a job in front of him to do things here with this organization. But the one thing is the pieces are clearly in place. There are good assets in place here for the Rangers. I don't know anybody in the National Hockey League or around the NHL who don't believe they're trending in the right direction. And now it's on Drury to do it. And I think what you said, Sean, at the very top was this was a wanted guy. You know, I mean, I think the Rangers saw that too. But to fire the guy who's leading the rebuild, to bring in this guy who's wanted, you have to make sure the guy who's wanted is better than the guy you fired. And that obviously still remains to be seen.
It does. And look, you know, you just put a date on it, right? It's been 3 years since the letter went out.
Since the letter, yeah.
How long have the Edmonton Oilers been rebuilding?
Oh, good. It takes forever.
With the best player in the world, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But how long have they been rebuilding, right? How long has Ottawa been rebuilding? Like, these are things that, you could get better quick in this league if you're good. You missed the playoffs by 2 points. You could be in a conference final the next year. Like, this league is so competitive that it allows you to do that. But I think when you throw everything out and you say, I'm going to build young, right? Think about all the players that we're talking about that they need. They traded them all. Right. They had all of that. They had veteran leadership. They had grit. They traded it all to get guys that they could use young on young contracts and they could develop. And that takes time. Right. So, you know, to me, it's like you can't have it both ways. You can't be like, oh, we would be a good team if we had these things. Well, you had those things and that's what made you who you are. So, you know, you have that going on, and then you have to have some patience. When you keep changing course, that's when you keep getting in trouble. And that's why some of these rebuilds have taken a long time, is because you keep changing courses, you keep changing coaches, you keep changing philosophies, you keep changing all kinds of different things. Let it play out and let it happen. And, you know, I'm really curious. I don't think, you know, JD can do whatever he wants. He's at that point in his hockey career and he's done so much. But Scott, if he doesn't have a job,
If he
doesn't have a job next year, like, to me, that'd be shocking.
Well, I mean, there's got to be an opening for him, obviously. But yeah, I think he's a very polished, experienced, smart hockey executive. You know, he's proven that. He has. I mean, the Bruins team he helped build, Like this Bruins team we see now, he helped build that team, you know, to the Stanley Cup champions they were 10 years ago. And a little bit of the pieces still remain from that. He was a part of that build, you know? So there's no question about that. One of the things though, I found interesting, but before I even get to that, you talk about rebuilds. Look at what you can have. You can jump out and have success 1 year and it won't last. You got to realize, like Tampa Bay in 2011, they realized, okay, we got the Eastern Conference final, but we weren't ready. Rebuild coming, right? And it took a little while, and look what happened. Years later, they win the Stanley Cup. Ottawa, an overtime goal away from beating the Pittsburgh Penguins and going to the Stanley Cup final. Okay, that was great. Lightning in a bottle. They're not going to get that again. Break it all down. Let's rebuild this thing again. And there's no hope for Ottawa to think that we're going to be a playoff team next year or probably the year after. Who knows? You know, I mean, it's going to take time. And the Rangers need patience, like you said. So, but one of the things that was interesting to me that came out of this today with Chris Drury is he was asked specifically about David Quinn. 3 years in, David Quinn now into his coaching career with the New York Rangers, hired by Jeff Gordon, very close with Chris Drury. They have connections going way back. And Drury did not give him the old vote of confidence. He just basically said, I'm not going to address anyone's job publicly right now. We have to go into the off season and we have to evaluate everything we got, which I think is the right answer. But I wonder, you know, like Chris Drury is as good of a personal and a working relationship as he has with David Quinn. Does Chris Drury believe that David Quinn's the right coach to bring the New York Rangers through this next step and make him a playoff team?
But at this point, is it Chris Drury that believes it or not? Right. Well, point with what just happened, like if I'm Chris Drury, I don't know if I talk about my coach either, because I don't know what the guy who hired me is going to say when the season ends. Right. Like I could sit here right now and say, oh, David Quinn, I just said it. He deserves a slap on the back. You could even put him on the fringes of the coach of the year conversation. But there's too many guys for him to really have an impact. But to me, he's done a really good job with a really young team. But none of that matters. Yeah, if the owner says, I don't like him. And you know what? I want a superstar. I want a big name. There's going to be some big names out there. That's what I want. We're ready to compete. Go get me Joel Quenneville. Look at what he did with the Florida Panthers. That is what I want. And do it right now. It's your job to do it.
Well, the only thing I would say to that is if they didn't believe in David Quinn or if the owner didn't believe in David Quinn, wouldn't he have been part of it Wednesday as well?
I don't know. They're still.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. But if you're Chris Drury, clearly the owner went and did what he wanted to do. And there's a track record of that. James Dolan also owns the Knicks, and they've gone through some of the same things, and they're finally seem to be coming out the other end. And you've just got my limited basketball knowledge in one sentence, but you know, this isn't unusual. And like I said, if I'm Chris Drury, I don't know that I can make that kind of guarantee, because I don't know what the offseason is going to bring. What if some big name coach is available? Right at the end of the year, somebody says, you know what, it's not working out for us. We're going to get rid of somebody like a Gerard Gallant, who nobody thought would be available when he became available, you know, when he got hired by Vegas. You know, that happens. You don't think James Dolan going to be like, look at what Joel did in Florida. Yeah. That's what this guy can do. Money's no object.
Yeah, money's no object. It'll be interesting to see. There's no question about it. But let's talk about something else that makes our jaws drop in a very surprising, shocking manner. Yet we really shouldn't be surprised. Connor McDavid. I stumble over words because I'm at a loss for them, Sean. You know, he's got, as we speak right now, Thursday afternoon, 93 points in 51 games. He's on 102-point pace. He's averaging 1.82 points per game. I didn't think that we would ever see something like this again in the National Hockey League with the way the game is played, the parity within the game, the knowledge of defenses, the video available, the scouting available, all of the, you know, the advanced analytics available. I didn't know we'd see another guy approach 2 points per game like we used to see. And here's Connor McDavid. He's going to have a 100-point season in a 56-game season. Frankly, it is amazing. We talked to Craig Berube about it. You'll hear that soon. He's blown away too. there aren't enough words, and I can't seem to find the right ones.
Yeah, and that's the rub, right? Like in trying to talk about this is you know, what do you say? You know, magnificent, great, they're already taken.
Yeah.
So you know, I just, to me, it's almost unfathomable. And it got to the point where he got close and you were like, huh, you know, 1.75 points. That's what he's got to do for an extended period to get there. And you're like, yeah, 1 point. There's no way he can sustain this. Here's a stat for you. In the last month, since we're May 6th now, since April 6th to May 6th, Connor McDavid's played 12 games. He has 29 points. 2.42 points per game.
Yeah.
When everybody doesn't want him to score against them. Nobody wants to be the guy that he gets 100 at, right? Nobody wants to be the 4-point team where, you know, every night, you know, he did it against Vancouver, he's just reeling off 4-point nights. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants to be associated with it. And he's still doing it. 29 points in 12 games. It's ridiculous. But here's the thing that I find somewhat interesting, and I hate to, you know, I hate to be the stick in the mud. What do the Edmonton Oilers do when they clinch their spot and they know they're sitting in the two seed and they have nothing to play for anymore? And there's Connor McDavid at 98 points, two games left.
Yeah.
What do you do?
You play him.
Okay. And then he gets hurt.
You play him. I am of the belief that, and I don't necessarily say you play him so he can get his 2 points and get to his 100. I think I'm of the belief you don't turn the ignition off when it is on and roaring as it is right now. You want to go into the postseason feeling the way you're feeling right now. Why risk turning it off than having to turn it back on again? And that's my belief a lot of the time with a lot of these things. There's just the odds that he could get hurt, sure, but he could get hurt in game one, right? I mean, the same odds exist of him getting hurt in game one as they do in game 55 of the season. Don't turn it off. Don't rest him. If he's not asking for it, don't do it. Don't have to play him 22 minutes a night, but don't turn it off, because it's maybe not necessarily for Connor McDavid because he's a machine, but it can be a challenge to turn it back on when the games all of a sudden ramp up and you are off for a week, right? When are the North Division playoffs going to start versus when Edmonton's season is going to end? All of these things have to play into it, but man, I wouldn't turn it off. I'd keep rolling with it, and I'd keep going. I think you play him, and if he gets there, he gets there. He doesn't. I don't care. I don't mess with what we're seeing right now.
Well, and they are trying to rest him a little bit in game. He's playing a few minutes less than he normally does. You mentioned 22 minutes. That's what he's at for the year. It's like 22 and a half, and he's been playing about 19. So he's getting a little bit of a breather in games, I guess. But to me, the games are coming so fast and furious, and they're going to come even faster. Like, anytime you can give a guy a break. Look, the Tampa Bay Lightning just set the best goalie in the league down for a weekend. Didn't even dress him.
Didn't even dress him.
Didn't even.
Goalies are different, though, aren't they?
Of course, they're different. But it's the
like
same
pitchers in baseball.
You know? It's the same thing. He's leading the league in wins. He's second in appearances. Like, there's things he's playing for, and they just said, you know what, go watch TV. Like,
yeah,
just go do something. Get your head out of it. And I think that can be a huge benefit. But I guess here's the thing I would ask looking forward, right? Because things change again next year. Like, is this a one-off in the way that the game's being played this year, the familiarity with opponents, less travel, everything else? Can Connor McDavid put up 165 points next year? Can he flirt with 200 with a regular travel schedule, with perhaps better opponents than he's playing now? You know, there's some teams in that division that people would argue are really weak. You know, he put up a, a good number of points against the Ottawa Senators. By the way, before you answer that, let's just remember, because I'll never live it down. I don't even need you to bring it up. I'll never bring it, down. Three games without a point. It was the only time he did it all year, and I had him dead and buried.
You did. You did. And to answer your question, it'll be harder, no question about it, with the travel and, you know, everything to be able to do what he's doing this season, to do it again. But I'm not going to be an idiot and put a ceiling on what Connor McDavid can do. Like, why would I do that? This guy is, I mean, he's even getting better. Like, you know, like, so I don't know. Why would I do that? There's no reason to say that he can't do it. Will it be harder? Yes. No reason to say he can't do it. I know a guy who doesn't think there's a ceiling on Connor McDavid either, and probably doesn't think there's a ceiling on his own team either. Craig Berube is, he's feeling pretty good about where the St. Louis Blues are right now. They're very close to clinching a playoff berth. We were able to catch up with Craig Berube, and here is that interview with the Blues coach. Craig, thanks for hopping on with us. Interesting time in the NHL. Interesting time for you guys as well. How you doing? How you feeling about your team right these days?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me on, guys. Yeah, it's. I feel, you know, our team's played. We got seven. We got points in the last seven games. You know, we've gotten points, so it's been pretty good. I mean, I know, you know, losing to Anaheim last night in a shootout is not ideal, but I think overall, you know, our game's, you know, been pretty good. You know, injuries have been a big deal for this hockey team this year. And again, even now we got, you know, four or five guys out of the lineup, regulars. So, but we're, you know, we've been dealing with that all year, but, you know, I like our team. You know, our young guys are coming along. They're doing a good job. Thomas and Kyra are really excelling, as players. Kyra's had a real good year this year, and, Bennington's really played well lately.
You've been through this a lot as a player and as a coach. How important is it? You talked about, you know, getting points in seven straight games. How important is it to be playing well at the end of the season? Some coaches say no, and usually they're not playing well, so they say it's not important at all. But in your opinion, how important is it to kind of hit your stride at this point of the season right now?
Yeah, I think it's important going into the playoffs that you're playing well. I really do. Different teams are in different situations, though. There's, you know, teams that are locked up and could be resting people and things like that, too. So I get, you know, there's different situations. But, you know, for our hockey team, we still need points to get in. So we need to be playing well, and we got to continue to play well. And I think it's at our advantage to be playing well going into the playoffs.
Do you believe, Craig, that you guys are starting to, or now are, playing the style of hockey that gave you so much success just a couple of years ago? Do you think you're in that mode now?
Yeah, not 100% like we want, but we're a different team now, though. So I don't think it's really, you know, going to be like it used to be. It's just not, you know, you have different players and you sort of have a different team. So I think that we are a little bit more of a rush team and do things off the rush rather than that grinding game down low. We do it to a certain extent, and we've got some players that, you know, been here that you know, that's their game, and it's a big part of our game still. But also we have more speed now and things like that we can make plays off the rush and do different things.
Craig, can you explain to outsiders, and I guess even to us, how important Ryan O'Reilly is to your team? You know, I look back at the game you played against Colorado the other day, and you guys got off to kind of a slow start, and he brings you right back into the fight. But, you know, and on national TV, that's such an advertisement for who he is. But this is something it seems he does in different ways almost every game. Can you explain how he kind of sets the tone for everybody on your bench?
Yeah, no, he does for sure. I think, you know, he's the captain of this team. And even before, when he wasn't, his work ethic and competitiveness, you know, really fuels and drives our team for sure. And he does it in a lot of different ways, you know, whether it's killing a penalty, power play, 5-on-5, you know, he checks so well. And he's so good with the puck, you know, like his stick is tremendous when it comes to checking and forcing guys to turn pucks over and things like that. And then, you know, he's never stopped working. If you ever watch, like when you watch him closely, like he, this guy just hounds and skates and works the whole game, never stops. And, you know, I think that just, you know, that everybody sees that. Everybody on our bench sees that. Like you guys see it, everybody sees it. It's just the work ethic. It's at a high level, and hockey IQ is a high level too. I don't know if I've really been around a smarter player in my career, to be honest with you. I know that when I scouted him for the World Cup team for Doug Armstrong, you know, I had him 5 out of 5 in hockey IQ, and I didn't have a lot of guys 5 out of 5 when I was scouting them.
I remember him saying when you guys were on your playoff run, the cup run, he's saying like about his time in Buffalo and then, you know, at the end of time in Colorado, like he was wondering if it was him, like the problems that the teams were having. Was it me? Was it me? And clearly it was not him, because there's something, I don't know if it clicked, you know, in St. Louis, or it's just, you know, it got to the style and the, you know, or just, you know, the maturity of his game. I mean, what do you think it was?
Well, I think, you know, he came to a good team, you know, the Blues, you know, had a really good back end for sure, you know, with Petrangelo and Bouwmeester and Parenko. So, you know, when you have a real good back end like that, you know, you have an opportunity to be a real good team, in my opinion. That's an important part of the game, your back end. And when he came here, I think he was slotted in with, you know, Braden Schenn down the middle, you know, Bozak down the middle. You know, Robert Thomas, a young kid, didn't play the middle all the time, in and out on wing, and Barbashev or Sundquist down the middle. Well, that's a pretty good middle of the ice and a real good back end. So I think that that combination and the style of play that we played, I think that really suits him. You know, that, you know, kind of a forecheck style of game, heavy game in the offensive zone, hanging on the pucks. I think that, you know, once we got that instilled in our team, that style of play, that really suited him, because he's when I look at him, he's a real small area type game guy. And that's what we play. Like, we're a small area type team. When we won, we had, you know, certain areas of the game where we're, you know, small area, then whether it's D zone or offensive zone, and that really suited him well. You know, he's not the fastest guy. We all know that. He's not a fluent skater or anything like that, but his work ethic gets him there, and he can really do things in tight areas, and that's where he excelled, and that's how the system we played.
I want to change gears a little bit to a different player. Mike Hoffman comes over, and he's had some ups and downs this year, but for the last month, he's been really good for you. I think it's 12 points in the last 11 games, 8 goals. What changed for him?
Well, I think him coming over, and I didn't watch him that closely before. I knew he scored a lot of goals and he's a power play guy, but you know, coming over to our team, and over to this division, I think it was a big change for him, to be honest with you. I think he, you know, there's not much room over here when you play hockey. You got to do things in some tight areas and small areas, and you got to compete and got to really work over here. It's not as like the East, in my opinion, is more free flowing. You guys can comment on that too, but over here, I mean, D, you're pinching constantly, and it's just, you got to do things in small areas. So I think conversations with me, and I know I scratched him a couple times, you know, for me, it was about competing and working harder and doing things in tight areas. And I think he's bought into that. And he's found his niche on the power play with us, which is good. Our power plays have been very good in the last month or so. And he's doing a real good job. He got one again last night in the power play. So I think he's found his home there. And, you know, it was kind of in and out for a while on the power play. So he's feeling comfortable right now, and that's a big thing. And I think that he's just – overall, he's understanding how we need to play the game and how you need to play the game over on this side in the West.
One of the other guys I wanted to ask you about and how valuable he is to your team is Colton Parayko. How much different? I mean, you guys had Petro and he's not there anymore. You had Bouwmeester. He's obviously not there anymore. Colton Parayko, when he's in the lineup versus when he's not in the lineup, describe the difference in your team.
Well, yeah, just a guy that can control the game is how I look at D-men that like himself, Pietrangelo, you know, even go back. I coached Pronger in Philly, and those guys can control games, you know. And I think that's when he's out of the lineup, we just miss that part of it. I find the last probably four games, he's really starting to skate and control things out there again. He's feeling more comfortable and using his shot a lot more. Like he let go a bunch last night. I'm not sure they all hit the net, but you know, he's starting to really shoot the puck. He's got a heavy shot, but it's just about him breaking plays up and skating that puck out of our zone and controlling the play. He's starting to use his body again. He's feeling better and being more physical. So he's a huge piece to our team. Obviously, when we won the cup, man, he was unbelievable and shutting down other teams' top lines.
Another guy that was unbelievable in that cup run, obviously, was Jordan Binnington. And when I watch you guys play, you know, it seems the more engaged he is, the more physical he is, you know, and he's almost challenging the other team physically more than mentally and getting involved in stuff. It seems like he's more on his game. Do you notice that as a coach? And is that an accurate assessment of kind of how dialed in he has to be both physically and mentally?
Yeah, it is an accurate assessment for sure. And I thought that was missing for a while this year. I think he had it at the start of the year, lost it a little bit on the way. And then I find that he has it back now. And you're exactly right. When he's involved, you know, and guys in their face a little bit, has that swagger and a little bit of bite to his game, you know, it brings out confidence in him. And, you know, he's challenging shooters more and, handling that puck and making plays with that puck. He's a tremendous puck handler back there. And I think our team feeds off that too. They see that, you know, him playing like that and having that swagger that rubs off on our hockey team.
Yeah, no question about it. I remember a statement he made not long ago where he said, "We're coming," you know, and there's that confidence that comes out. So you still have a little bit of work to do here to get in, but I'm curious, you know, it'll be Vegas or Colorado, maybe even Minnesota, who you face, you know, in the first round. So you don't get to pick your opponent, but how do you feel you match up in this division? How do you feel you've played? And will you maybe even have a better idea after these next two games against Vegas too?
Yeah, I believe we'll have a better idea against these next two games against Vegas. They're big games for sure. I think you know, this was the first year where I find Vegas has kind of, you know, they've been better than us this year against us. Before this year, I don't think we lost to them. But this year, I find that we're finding ways to lose to them. You know, whether we have the lead in games or whether we, you know, come out, we don't start very well against them. They get the lead on us. We're not aggressive enough against them, in my opinion, right now. And we need to be starting tomorrow. We played Colorado pretty well. I think, you know, we beat them the first game of the year. Then we got blown out that second game. But I think the games have been pretty good. Other than that, I think we do okay against Colorado. You obviously, that's a high-end, you know, line they got and a couple real good D. McCarr and Girard that really give you a lot of trouble. But I find that, you know, for some reason we play that team pretty well, Colorado. But the team that we played, you know, I think the best hockey against this year is Minnesota, to be honest with you. Our games against Minnie, we played probably better than any team in our division this year for whatever reason. They're good games. I think that Minnie's played well against us too. I think the games are real good, but I just like the style of game we play against them. I like the competitiveness against them. Our team seems to be more engaged against them than any team for some reason. So I don't know if that's the best matchup for us or not, but you know, these two Vegas games are big games. So we've got to get prepared tomorrow for Vegas.
I'll tell you, I would sign up for a 7-game series like the one you just played, the last three games against Minnesota. Those games were wild. They had a little bit of everything. Yeah. And I'm curious, like, that kind of set the tone. And then you look at a game like Minnesota and Vegas last night, and I don't know if you saw it, but it seemed like it was ratcheted up 10 times. So like the physicality, you know, guys getting in each other's face. Do you see, especially with all the interdivisional play, as we get down to the very end and teams are trying to send messages, so to speak, that the games have changed even more? To me, this season has been so condensed and so full of rivalries that it's been a harder, more physical game than you might get in any other regular season. But it seems like that's gone up another notch or two in the last week to week and a half.
Definitely. I agree with you 100%. Like even the mini games we played, they're pretty ramped up physical games. And I watched that Vegas game this morning against Mini, and it definitely had a lot of bite in the game. You could tell right away that it was going to be a physical game and, you know, a lot of things going on. So I think a lot of it has to do with, you might play them in the playoffs and, you know, just playing teams hard and physical and, you know, letting them know what a series would be like against them, I'm sure. And also everybody's fighting for some spots. Like Vegas wants first place, I'm sure. Colorado wants first place. Mini wants first, you know, they all want to be seated where they want to be seated. And so I think that has a lot to do with it too.
So I got to ask then, we always hear when the playoffs come around, you throw out what happened in the regular season, right? Because you might be facing a team that you faced three times or four times in the regular season, right? In a playoff series. Is that the case this season? Can you throw out what happened in the regular season when you're now going up against the same teams you've been battling with all season?
Well, I think you have to move on from it because it's a new, like the way I look at it, the playoffs are a new season. And for me, playoffs, when they roll around, the intensity level is going to be a lot higher than it was in a regular season. That's the truth. And so I find the games will be different than any game you played in a regular season.
Coach, I got to ask you and to go off from your team a little bit. And I did this last week too, but it to me, it's one of the biggest stories in the NHL. Connor McDavid's on the verge of scoring 100 points, something that we couldn't even imagine going into the season. You played with a lot of great players. You've coached some really good players. Can you believe what he's doing? And I guess to an extension, what Austin Matthews doing and getting 40 goals in 52 games.
Yeah. Well, they're both unreal players. I mean, McDavid is as good as I've seen as a player, probably in my lifetime, to be honest with you. From a speed aspect to, you know, strength and quickness and everything, shot, passing, all of it. Like he just does everything at such a high level and a high speed. I've never ever seen anybody do what he's done, to be honest with you. He's an unreal player. And Austin Matthews is, in my opinion, not far behind him. He's a little bit different. Obviously more of a shooter. He's got a great shot and release, and he will probably always score more goals than McDavid, I would say, but maybe not. But you know, he's another guy with size and speed and strength, and does everything at a high level. And you know, his shot is tremendous. Both these guys are players that you don't see around too often, to be honest with you.
It sounds like you're glad they're both in the North Division.
Well, only one year.
You might end up playing them at some point, but not right away.
Yeah.
They're tough to handle. Like, you know, McDavid, we've done pretty well against them in the past with Parenko and Bollmeister out there, two big guys getting in the way. And you know, they both can skate pretty well back there and skate with them. So we had a luxury there with those two guys going out against McDavid and doing a good job against them. But, you know, a lot of teams don't have that.
No, definitely not. And last one for me, David Backes is not Connor McDavid, and he is certainly not Austin Matthews, never will be confused with him, but obviously one of the more emotional players in the league. And you got to see what that was like last night with him going back to St. Louis. What was that like to watch? I know he's on the other team and you didn't coach him, but David Backes and the emotion that went on in that building. And what does that say about him, the type of player he's been in the league, and also the market of St. Louis and the fans there?
Yeah. Well, he was very well respected here. He was a captain here for a number of years. He captained a lot of good teams here. They very successful under him as a captaincy. This guy was a you know, a real good two-way player. He did a lot of things for the team on and off the ice. You know, he was their leader and hard worker and could check and could score and could do a lot of different things for quite some time as a player here. You know, I thought their team, Anaheim, played hard for him last night, to be honest with you. I thought that that game was a difficult game for us. They played well. And, you know, I'm sure that they wanted David Backes to go out in style. And so the team really showed up and played hard for him. And that sends, you know, that just shows, you know, what he's like as a person and what they think of him. I thought it was great, you know, like, you know, just the tribute to him and the St. Louis people, they loved him. The St. Louis fans, here, they really recognize people who are good leaders, that hard workers. This is a blue collar town. They like the style of player. I mean, so, you know, it was good for David. You know, he's a good person. And again, he did a lot for this town and this hockey team.
Coach, last one for me and we'll let you go. I know you're wrapped up in what you're doing and getting ready for the playoffs, but I imagine being involved for this long, you're also a fan. What do you think's in store for the next 2 months in the playoffs? It's going to be different than anything we've ever seen. And there's already been, it feels like we've been playing playoff hockey for 3 months already. You know, as a fan and you look at what's going to happen and all the rivalries in the first two rounds, what do you expect in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think you're going to see some tremendous hockey. I really do. You're going to have some great matchups right away. You got to play it out in your division, and you know, you're going to see some real good hockey right away. I think the first round is going to be tremendous hockey with the matchups and things like that. You know, it's going to be a grind and a battle. A team that comes out, you know, you got to get some breaks along the way. Things got to go your way. I think it's very evenly matched all around, you know, the hockey. It's so tight. I think the league's done a tremendous job of, you know, every team has a chance to win, the way I look at it. They really do. Especially you get in the playoffs, you give yourself a chance to win. And I think, like, again, you're going to see some great hockey here early on. It's going to be a grind. And it's going to be, I think you're going to see some real heavy, hard-hitting, physical hockey. That's what I see. I mean, I just, you know, I look at the Washington Capitals and the way they, you know, Lavie's brought that style of play. I coach with Lavie, and, you know, the way Washington's playing right now, that style of play, it's really good hockey, and it's great hockey in the playoffs.
Makes it almost impossible to do predictions, but we have to do them anyway.
Because it does. People love. It's tough. It's really tough to do predictions. You know, I, you know, that's a hard job.
Not as hard as yours though, Coach. And we'll let you get back to it. We really appreciate you giving us some time here, and good luck the rest of the way. And hopefully we'll see you soon.
Yeah. Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me on. All right. Take care. All right.
Always good to catch up with Chief, as they call him, Sean. Right. I mean, and they got a team. He's a good coach and they have a team that knows how to win. Right.
They have a team that reminds me very much of the team that won it all. Right. You remember the struggles they had early in the year, which brought Berube into the fold and Binnington kind of finding his way and being a workhorse down the stretch. And, you know, I thought it was interesting that he said they play a different way, that they're more off the rush than the cycle that they were. And, you know, but clearly they can find that cycle game. And I know for a fact, and these next two games are going to be a lot of fun to watch when they play Vegas. I know for a fact that Pete DeBoer and Bednar in Colorado are looking at the St. Louis team and saying, I outlasted everybody. I got the number one seed in the West. We're the best team in the West. We're the best of the West. And this is what I get. I get Craig Berube. I get Colton Parayko. I get Jordan Binnington. I get Ryan O'Reilly. Like, what kind of a reward is this? Where's my second wild card?
There's no reward for making the playoffs. The reward for making the playoffs this year is a hard first round matchup. There's no question in almost every division. The thing that impresses me with, and he brought it up with Hoffman and the power play, they're 8-3-2 since April 7th, and their power play in that stretch has scored a goal in 11 of those 13 games and is 40.6%, which is tops in the league in that stretch in the last month. Like, that's really impressive. And Hoffman's made a big difference on them. They're 5-0-2 in their last seven. You know, I had them dead and buried. I really did. I didn't think this was the year for the Blues, and had them dead and buried. And then here they go, come right back to life. Arizona seeds the way for them to make it. And, you know, they can clinch to Friday, I believe. The Kings are still hanging around on the periphery, but not, they're not really going to make it. That's a dangerous team. There's no question. And they are, as you brought up, you know, in the interview, I mean, they're playing well at the right time too. And that, and I agree with Berube on that, that it matters when you, when you're playing well at the right time. And that's why I wouldn't sit McDavid, like we were talking about in the segment before we went to the interview.
Yeah. I guess it just seems to me that there's a finite number of games you can win, and you don't want to put them all together in one streak right before the playoffs. Yeah. Like, maybe there's a little bit of superstition in me, but you know, I just, and that's why I was curious for him to see, like, if it's really all that important that they, that a team be playing well. I think a team has to be playing well. I think the results might not need to be there. You know, and I think that's the difference. But, you know, we talk about that West and how tough it is. The Central, you know, you do the Super 16. I was super late this week.
Yes.
I apologize profusely. But
you were at the dentist.
I was at the dentist. It's like a whole new me, man.
Clean teeth. I'm
finally
shaving,
vaccinated and I'm taking care of all the, I'm going to get an oil change next. For me, not for the car. And, but you look at the Central, three of the five teams, top five teams in the Super 16 are Central teams. You got the defending Stanley Cup champion. You got the Carolina Hurricanes, who I had at number three, and I feel guilty about it. I probably should have moved them up. I've just been so comfortable with Vegas and Colorado 1-2. And then you have Florida, who's exceeded all expectations and is going to be a wicked hard out. I think Barkov is playing. You talk about guys who are playing like we've never seen play before. To me, that's Barkov. He's taking his game to another level. And then, so you got the battle for fourth, which is almost over after Dallas lost last night. So you got the defending Western Conference champion, Stanley Cup finalists, and the Dallas Stars, who just seems to have run out of runway. And you got the Nashville Predators, who, you know, lost but gained ground because there's less games now to deal with. But that division to me is a complete meat grinder. Maybe it's not as big a punishment at the number four to get Nashville, although I think until these last two games, they've been playing lights out as well. But it looks like Dallas isn't going to make it, and that's too bad. Because like I said, I think they, like the Blues, who had enough runway, Dallas just ran out of runway and bodies. Although Tyler Seguin made it back. And I don't know, you know, if you saw the video that was put out by him and his group that basically documented his comeback. Like, I didn't realize how bad his injury was. He could barely walk. It wasn't Alex Smith and the 30 and 30 documentary that just blows your mind that he was able to come back and play at that level. But there was footage in that video of Seguin taking like little tiny baby steps, you know, pushing like 20 pounds of weights around with his leg. Like, there was nothing there. He had to start completely over. Everything had, for how long it took, everything had atrophied, and he had no muscle, no nothing. And it was a far more involved process than I had ever imagined it to be. So they're likely not going to make the playoffs, but it was really good to see Tyler Seguin playing again.
Yeah. And to add to that, I'm sure returning this season gives him some peace of mind to know that he can play, right? I think that's a huge factor in this too, is rather than wait until September when training camp resumes and you maybe hopefully get into some preseason games before the season starts in October, he knows now, right? He can go into this offseason understanding that he can play and he's ready to go, and he can just keep building toward coming back to being the Tyler Seguin we all know. As far as the other parts of the division, so I had Carolina 1 in the Super 16 this week. I had them number 1. Look, I'm going to ask you this question before we move on to I want to talk about TJ Oshie and the Capitals too, Sean, but before we move on, Carolina, Tampa, Florida. In our Super 16, Carolina was 2, Tampa's 4, Florida's 5. Rank them in order. How do you feel about them right now as you're thinking about the playoffs? What's the order of those teams in your mind?
It's exactly how we did it.
Yeah.
I think Carolina is the best team in that division. It's hard because you can't compare them against the West. Like, I just think those two teams in the West are just such behemoths. Like, they're just, they're like dinosaurs wandering around waiting for somebody of their ilk to play. And maybe Carolina is that team. But, you know, Berube made a great point. Like, they play different in the West.
They
and,
do.
You know, for years, it was the joke amongst all of us media guys that that was big boy hockey that was played in the West.
Right.
And I think maybe it is this year. Like, when you watch those games, they're muck. They're it's just sandpaper, grit. You know, they're Mike Babcock games. You're going to get greasy and all those things that go on small area games, like Berube said. And, mm-hmm. I think in the Central, you think about the speed that's involved, the creativity that's involved. Those games fly, man. They're wide open. And it's going to be like a boxing match when all these teams finally meet up and they get out of their own bubbles. It's going to be styles that are going to dictate the fights, and it's going to be really intriguing. So, but I think Carolina to me is the team that's there. And this circles back to the Rangers, right? Like, to me, Carolina went through that rebuild, and now they're a team that we talk about every year as a cup contender. And it's a young core that was added to that they built, but two, there's Rod sitting in the last year of his contract. Everybody keeps saying it's going to get done. It's going to get done. Don't worry about it. They're going to get it done. Rod wants to stay there. We're in the second to last week of the season. It ain't done. Who knows? Something could happen, right? And I think that's part of the reason why Chris has to be somewhat coy, in that he doesn't know what the real estate market's going to be when he has to decide what he wants to do with his coaches.
No question about it. Yeah. No, and I mean, Rod Brindamore is, if he's not,
and it's going to get done.
It's going to get. If he's not top three, he's top five coach in the league. If he's not number one, I mean, he might be the best coach in the league right now, you know. And I think Carolina can play the style that Berube talked about, as well as the style that we've seen from Tampa and Florida. I think they can have a mixture of both, and that's why I think they're really, really dangerous and a legit cup contender, because they can beat you at that style too. And that's
I agree 100%. They did it against the Bruins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they maybe didn't come out on the top of it, but they represented themselves, and I think they have the players to do that. I'm just saying, like I said, styles and being able to dictate your style is going to be a huge part of when we get to the Final Four. And I actually think that Carolina is more of a hybrid and can play multiple styles.
Yeah. All right, last thing before we get out of here. So much going on around the Washington Capitals the past few days. We talk about the Rangers and all the stuff going on there. So much with them, too. Obviously, you had all the Tom Wilson stuff, but Alex Ovechkin, injury, comes back, plays one shift, didn't play again, missed the game Wednesday. Evgeny Kuznetsov and Ilya Samsonov are disciplined. They missed the game on Monday, then again on Wednesday. Kuznetsov's on the COVID list. Through all of that, you have one of the most emotional stories, one of the most emotional nights I think you'll see in the National Hockey League this season. And I'm not talking about fight night at the Garden. I'm talking about what TJ Oshie did at the Garden on Wednesday. And I thought it was, look, I feel for TJ Oshie. I don't know what he's going through. And thankfully I can't imagine it, but his father, Tim, passes away on Tuesday. He's back with the team on Wednesday. And he scores a hat trick in a win. And Nicklas Backstrom gives him a hug because he said it just looked like he needed a hug, you know. And it's an emotional time. And he tweeted afterwards how emotional it was for him. You don't want to see stories like that, Sean, because it involves families going through hardship like this. But, man, I mean, you couldn't help but feel for TJ. You couldn't help but feel for TJ Oshie and then root for TJ Oshie in the same moment.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. And that's the thing. That whole night was visceral.
Yeah. Right?
From the first face-off to the end. I mean, there was so much emotion and such a wide variety of emotions, negative and positive, and the good of the sport and the not so good of the sport. Like, it was all there on one big canvas, and there was just paint thrown everywhere. And when it was over, it was like one of those beautiful paintings that you look at and sells for $8 million. And you're like, what is that? But that's what this was. I mean, it was everything you want about the sport. And what a testament to his dad, right? Like, his dad was his coach and sacrificed so much for him. And he's able to put up a hat trick. You know, you saw that first goal and just that release of emotion when he scored it. You know, incredible. I mean, where it came in the game, and you know, it didn't matter to a degree because it was for his dad. And what a testament to what his dad created, right? Like, in coaching him and teaching him the skills to do that, the mental toughness to do that, you know, and it reminded me a lot of the game that Brett Favre had, right, after his dad died. Mm-hmm. And he had that huge game on Monday Night Football.
Like, yeah.
What great stories these are, and they should be celebrated. And it was kind of a shame that it lost a little bit of its celebration and some of the other things that happened in that game. And, you know, the news that came out right before the game with the Rangers, you know, well, like we talked about in the beginning, getting rid of their management team and everything. Like, there were literally, and you wrote the game story, there were literally 9 leads to that game story.
yes, there were.
And TJ Oshie might have been 7th,
but that's them. The lead I went with.
Yeah, and for other people, it would be literally the last line of the story. Oh, by the way, TJ Oshie scored a hat trick
day after his father passed away. Like, you know,
yeah. So,
and what other team, Sean? What other team? I don't know that I could be wrong, but I don't know that I've seen another team honor a player's father, you know, in the way that the Capitals did with the stickers on the helmets and Peter Laviolette wearing a pin, and, you know, with the black circular stickers with the white lettering coach, you know, on the back of their helmets. I thought that was just special, you know, and I think it goes back to how they've gotten to know his dad, know his dad's story. Obviously he was battling Alzheimer's, and he was on the ice with TJ when they won the Stanley Cup. So much there, but I can't think of another time where a team, they honor, you know, former players or something along those lines, but where they honored the father of one of their players in that way. I thought it was really unique and quite remarkable, actually, by the Capitals.
Yeah, no, but he's all of their dads, right? Yeah. We all have that story of creation of who we are, right? And I think everybody in the organization looked at TJ's dad and said, like, that's my dad, and we should honor him. And you know, and that was a great story. And there's no taking away from it. But there's another great story that was happening this week that nobody's paying attention to because they're all done and they've been done for a long time. But up in Buffalo, there's a 28-year-old kid named Michael Hauser who took it. He's a goalie. Took it to the Islanders, who are trying to figure out where they are in the playoffs, twice. Those are 2 wins. The Islanders walked into those games and they're like, Michael Hauser, he played in the ECHL for the last 8 years. Some games in the AHL. Hadn't played a game this year, was signed to Buffalo's taxi squad as protection because they needed a third goalie. He's basically their e-bug at that point. Hadn't played a game all year in Buffalo, in Rochester, or Cincinnati. And all of a sudden, every goalie on their roster's hurt. It's basically him and, like, Dustin Tokarski, who's a good story in his own mind, but in his own way, not in his own mind. He's a good story in my mind as well. But all of a sudden, they're like, Michael Hauser, we're going to let him play. And he goes out and he wins.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's a great story. Like, that's what they write movies about, right? Here's a kid that kicked around in the ECHL for 8 years and never said, I quit. Every guy, he played for London the year they went to the Memorial Cup. They had 13 NHLers. He was the 13th NHLer on that London team. They lost the Memorial Cup, by the way, to Schwinnigan. But there were 13 NHLers on that team. Every other kid that didn't make the NHL, except for one, had quit hockey by now.
And he was
the only one. Kept coming back and saying, I still got something to give this game. And then the game gave him something. And then he won again. And now he's playing tonight. He could go 3-0. He could be as good as Spencer Knight in Florida.
I saw a story. I think Scott Harrington from the Blue Jackets played with him in London. And, you know, as the game was going on, Harrington is at the Blue Jackets game. He's not playing, and he's barely paying attention to the Blue Jackets game because he's following his buddy in Buffalo and what he's doing right there. And I, you know, every one of those guys that he played with in London couldn't be happier for him. And it's stories like, look, you know what? That'll be the best story of the Buffalo Sabres season.
Look, it's basically The Rookie. They already made this movie. It's a baseball movie with Dennis Quaid in it. And he's a high school teacher in at Texas, I believe. And he's given up his baseball dream. And then somebody calls him and says, or he decides he's going to play again for the love of the game. And he ends up in the major leagues as a relief pitcher. And, you know, the final scene is him on the mound and everybody in the town going crazy. And, you know, he's made it. That's what this kid did. Except he never gave up the game. He loved the game and he loved it. And he kept on saying, there's more for this game to give me. And he finally got the payoff. And the beauty of it is he didn't care whether he got the payoff or not. Sure, yeah, it's great, but he was playing because he wanted to play, and the game rewarded him, and there's nothing I love more than that, and I'm sorry that more people don't get to hear about it because we've all kind of forgotten about the Buffalo Sabres because we're thinking about the playoffs.
Well, yeah, no doubt about it. We are thinking about the playoffs. That is a great story. There were a lot of really very interesting, like I said, it's been a very interesting week in the National Hockey League, filled with storylines, and Sean, there's only more to come because the playoff races are – nah, we can't say they're heating up anymore. They're cooling off, and we're all kind of gearing up for the playoffs. And like Berube said, there's going to be some great hockey to come our way here in the next couple of months.
Yep, we'll get back together next week. We hopefully will have some playoff matchups, maybe do a little bit of predictions, make ourselves look like fools like we told Berube we would. And we'll have a lot of fun looking at how these games are going to play out. And look, next Saturday, right? Probably the start of the playoffs.
Yeah.
So you're less than 10 days away now.
I can't wait to be wrong.
Short time of calendar.
I can't wait to be wrong, Sean, because I usually am come playoff time. Although I think I did pick the Lightning to win the Stanley Cup last year. So I'll give myself that.
I'm going to be right this year. I'm going to get all every round right.
Oh, then I'll bet on that. I'll bet on that. Anyway, we'll go through it next week. And until we do, everybody stay safe out there.